This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're going to start with a nice word in Parshas Bereishis. Another fresh look at the Heilige Torah Kedosha. The Chedu writes on the Pusik, V'noyach Mutzachayim Ba'ayin Yashem, all the way at the end of the Parsha. Usually we talk about Noyach when it's Parshas Noyach, but Parshas Bereishis already mentions that Noyach was Mutzachayim Ba'ayin Yashem. And he explains that the Mishnah says, Kol Shariach Abriyus Noyach Emeni, Riach Amukum Noyach Emeni. Noyach Emeni. When somebody finds favor in the eyes of people, because of the way he behaves, the way he interacts, you know, then automatically it's a sign that Riach Amukum Noyach Emeni, Hashem also, he finds favor in Hashem's eyes as well. This is Yediyah, the Lushan Zoyer. Ayla told us Noyach Noyach Taka next week. Naiche L'Alyoinim, Naiche L'Tachtoinim. Noyach was good, both L'Alyoinim, in Hashem's eyes, and L'Tachtoinim. And, you know, the Svarim say that it's tuli hu b'hu. When a person finds favor in people's eyes, because they're pleasant and they're easygoing, and they know how to interact properly, then automatically that is a sign and a reason why he's finding favor in Hashem's eyes as well. You know, when it comes to shulam bayis, and it comes to anything that has to do with relationships and other people, it's just important to remember, for some people, it's naturally easy to get along with other people. And for some people it's difficult, and very often the people who is difficult, the issues or areas of Benudin L'Chavayra, let's call it, the initial issue, sometimes it's easier for them, the idea of Benudin L'Mukim. There are people that it's easier for them to get along with, let's call it, with Hashem, than with other people. But understanding that part of what Hashem is asking from us is to make sure we're getting along with the people around us, that sometimes just makes it a little easier. And so it's just another way to find favor in Hashem's eyes. So let me read a question. It's a long question. Not a question, it's a long letter, but I hope it's going to be helpful to read it and try to give some clarity. Good morning. Your shiurim are all amazing, this one included. So this is feedback on a shiur. I didn't even go back to look at what the shiur was about, but I think it's going to be obvious. I enjoyed listening to it over and over again. You brought up good solid points and explained it very well, yet I listened to the reading of the letter a few times. I think the main points were missed. I want to clarify it because I can relate to it all too well and would love to have the real points addressed. I'm not hearing this woman mention anything negative to the fact that her husband has a bike. She is, however, clearly mentioning her unhappiness of it being done behind her back. She's not asking for a say in the decision, just to be in the know. With marriage, you sign up for a husband bringing panusa and a wife doing the housework, and an intimate relationship part, and mutual sharing of life. Perhaps you won't find it written in the ksuba, but it's definitely self-understood and expected to share life. The man has all the power in decision-making. According to the third perspective, a wife is to stand at his side, smile sweetly, nod in agreement, show support to whatever his heart desires to think or say or do. If she has an issue with anything, she should think it over many times if it's worth mentioning. If yes, she's to say it gently with respect, being careful not to hurt his high ego. In short, she has no identity of her own, she is merely her husband's puppet. If he doesn't give her a good feeling by including her in his ideas, plans, work decisions, or give her the feeling of respect by trusting and trust by sharing his life with her, what is left of this poor lady? Nothing more than a paper doll. A woman is not here just for service and pleasure. When my husband needs a shirt, or his talisquten washed, a meal prepared, a child needs care, he knows my name very well. How do I suddenly disappear from his mind in other areas of life? When it is an isolated incident, you may be right that perhaps he's afraid of her reaction, but she's adding that he doesn't share anything. You're probably right that never sharing anything is too severe to be accurate, but it sure is way too many to explain it with his fear of her reaction. Rather, maybe a bad behavior pattern or failure to understand the way marriage relationship works. I don't know, but I'll spell out a few examples for better understanding. My husband left Koil after X amount of years of running the same schedule and didn't tell me a boo. He changed his dress code, upgraded, without telling me before. I had a shock when I noticed it for the first time. He was offered a great side job, accepted it, started learning for the job, and still didn't tell me anything. I heard it from someone else. He joined the koilel again and didn't tell me. He worked on a small project, which he sure knew I would be thrilled to hear he's doing, but he didn't share it with me. I heard afterwards from an outsider. There was a shidduch in the family that almost all the family knew about, and he told me the news the night before the shidduch happened. Why wasn't I in the picture all week? Am I his wife or not? A little while ago, my husband bought a gift for our son. Right before handing it over, he whispered in my ear, "I bought a present for Yankee." I was very hurt by it and later explained to him that this involved deciding to buy a gift, thinking of what to buy, purchasing it, wrapping it. Okay, maybe the salesman did this one. Composing and rewriting the poem. It's a project of a few days at least, probably more. Never in all this time did he find an appropriate, did he find it appropriate or necessary to even just tell me about it. So I communicated. I explained what bothered me. Guess what? He just bought him another gift. Same story. We're sitting at the Yom Tov table. Everyone's enjoying the meal. And he walked in with a wrapped box. While handing it over to my son, he glanced at me for a split second and said, I bought him a gift. Am I the mother in this home? What am I in his eyes? A maiden that's here for cleaning and cooking? I want to point out that my husband is not mean or bad. It's just that he's using the employer-employee relationship instead of the husband-wife relationship. He is even a very good boss. He's very caring and helpful when necessary. Just reinforcing. I know these examples are mostly in his boundary, but again, it's not about having a say. I don't have an issue with any of those things. I'm very easy on him. I usually just nod along to anything he wants or says. It's about being treated like a wife, as that woman in the original question said. A wife is not a servant, not a child, not a worker. She is a life partner, a soulmate. Being treated as a wife would mean that she knows more or less his schedule, is aware of the basics in the financial area, is in the know of his personal whereabouts, opinions, ideas, and plans, and all stuff pertaining to the house, family, and everything around is mutually discussed. All this fits perfectly well and is no contradiction to the idea of V'yi Yimshel Bach. This balance gives the wife her status as wife rather than servant. The mutual relationship creates the right emotions necessary for her ultimate obligation she was created for. When all this is very clear, I believe you can understand how not being available is not tit for tat, but simply a very natural consequence of the husband's behavior. Being together, husband and wife, requires a lot of very deep feelings. When those feelings are missing, she's incapable of performing. Where is she supposed to get the emotional strength from? So again, she's not considering all options and choosing this as a weapon. She's not feeling good about herself in the relationship and therefore naturally resists his closeness that comes only when it's all about himself. Truthfully, it goes even deeper than that. I wouldn't like to hurt the man's feelings, but when the partnership feeling is missing, there is a repellent feeling, just like a magnet reversed. Sorry if I'm being too harsh. Just to clarify, so you shouldn't spend another shiur on the importance of this part of marriage, I never refuse my husband. I even tell him thank you sometimes and keep on reassuring him that I'm available 24/7 whenever he desires. I do balance it, though, with telling him that it's in his court to make it more pleasurable. Finally, the communication issue. When speaking nicely doesn't bring on much change in behavior, is there anything left for her to do? To sum it up, how do you react when you keep on finding out things about your husband that you should have been told about, but you weren't, especially when it keeps on happening even after communicating it many times? I know refusing and turning down a husband is not an option, but how would you direct a woman in such a situation? Please consider one question. What came first, the chicken or the egg? Is it the wife's attitude that brought on the husband's behavior, or vice versa? The fact that you answered the question very bluntly without sugarcoating the message is one of the reasons why I prefer a public answer rather than one-on-one. In a private session, the professional usually is careful to make the client feel good, and therefore the message doesn't come across too clear. Whenever my husband and I did speak to a professional, we always came out hearing two different things, and I'm left wondering who is right and who is wrong. In any way, my point is that I'm looking forward to hear the truth. Hatzlacha. Wow. Okay, that was a very long question. I hope that the answer will be a little shorter, simply because I don't want the share to be too long. Let me just stop by saying this. I think it goes without saying that obviously what you just heard now, a long description of what's going on, is only one side of a story. I mean, you mentioned all the way at the end that when you went for help, you came out hearing two different messages. I assume it has to do with telling two different stories. I don't know. I just recently had this again. It's sometimes almost comical how two people could be living in the same house, living the same story, and having two such opposite narratives that you start wondering, are you talking about the same people? Now, I have no idea. I have no reason to assume specifically that your husband would either disagree with the narrative or say it very differently, or I'm not sure what. I just have to admit that whatever I'm going to say is based on, you know, what you're telling me. Very often I see situations that could be so extreme, related so extremely that by the time somebody else is saying the story, it's so far from one from another that it's a bit mind-boggling. But that's what emotional stuff does to us, distorts the way we see things. One more thing I want to mention is that to cover this whole letter obviously would take forever, because it touches on very many different aspects. Whether it's sharing information, whether it's roles of who does what, whether it's communication, whether it's communicating. Obviously, the longer a question and the more details, which confuses things, the more it involves and the harder to zoom in. But I'm going to try to offer some kind of perspective a general perspective that I think might be helpful. One thing that whoever's listening to my classes for long enough, and even those that aren't, may have picked up on, that I try to always avoid extremes. Avoid extremes means I try to help people understand that it's good to avoid extremes in real life. I also try to avoid extreme perspectives, because very often they're inaccurate. So let me explain what that means in this case. For a husband to have to share everything, now I know nobody ever hinted that, nobody meant that, I know. But for a husband to share everything, and the same thing with a wife, share everything, is never good. It's never good. It almost never comes from goodwill, almost never. And which means nobody's looking to share everything. Most people would appreciate at least some kind of privacy. And in most cases, when somebody feels they have to, or they're being forced to, there's already something wrong with it. A person's entitled to his boundary, use the word boundary in the middle, his boundary, his thing, his privacy, his decisions, his thoughts. What are you thinking? You have to tell me. You have to be honest. Transparency. Very often, most often, when somebody has to share everything, or even shares everything, not because they have to, most often it's not good, believe it or not. You think about it. What do you mean? The best situation is where you're so close, you share everything. It's not that way. I'm not going to go into the whole discussion now. But most often, when somebody's sharing everything, it's either done unwillingly, or it ends up coming back to bite. And, you know, it's an important topic of its own. The other extreme of sharing nothing, which, you know, based on what this description in this letter, you know, someone who's taking jobs, changing dress codes, family issues, decisions, sharing nothing at all, is definitely a problem. Definitely a problem. Not a question. I don't want to give the impression, based on anything I'm going to say, that, oh, it's okay, you know, you don't have to share everything, and then have someone else write me more feedback, which I'll address a year from now, that, you know, how can you say such a thing? Aren't we married? It's clear that there are two extremes that are unhealthy. Having to share everything and sharing nothing are unhealthy. The healthy medium and the right balance, that's always something that's somewhat up for grabs, because there's no exact way to measure these things and explain these things. We could just start by negating the extremes. If somebody's living mamash a private life, two people under one roof, and they have no, they're never discussing, never sharing, never explaining, you don't know anything about his opinions and his thoughts and his plans and his decisions, obviously that's a big problem. That's a big problem. I'm not going to deny it. Not a question. It's not a way to do things. Even if somebody has a good reason why. Even if somebody will say, which something I might say or something I said in the previous class, that they can't share because of this, because of that, it's still not a way to live. So you have to look for an aitza. You have to look for a way to do something. You know, to say that I'm resorting to living a private life because the way I used to share didn't work, it's not something that's going to work across the board long term. So it's not a question that, regardless of why something came about, it's not the way to do it. That's first of all. Another thing, though, in perspective, to avoid extremes. Let's say you're living with somebody who is living a private life, not sharing things with you, right? How extreme are you going to look at that? Is that terrible? Is it abusive? Does it mean that person is not providing anything at all? Or take it for what it is? I mean, if you're going to look at a husband who's making these kind of decisions that you describe on his own and not sharing with you for no reason at all, simply because he's using the employer-employee relationship, as you call it, right? And you're going to see him as an abusive husband who's providing nothing, I think that's also inaccurate. That's also taking things to an extreme. There's a reason why, and this is something that I think people don't like to hear when I break it down, but I do often, and I see that you listen to enough of my classes by the way you're writing this letter to know that. The Torah sets up a model of marriage. The Torah talks about what a husband has to do, what a wife has to do, what a husband must provide and can't withhold and resist, and what a wife must provide and can't withhold and resist. The Torah puts it in very few basic things. And there's a reason for that. I don't mean to say the reason for the Torah, but the reason is because that's what marriage is. Now, the fact that a husband's coming home an hour later than you want, or the fact that a wife is not cooking the menu that you like, it could be a problem. And if somebody comes and complains that I'm married so many years and I ask my wife to make a certain food and she just turns me down, she doesn't tell me why, it's a problem. I'm not going to say it's not a problem. But when you look back into the obligations and the basics of marriage, it's important to realize, is that on the list or it's not on the list? Now, some people will say, what do you mean? But it's the emotional behind it, and it's the relationship and the closeness and the this. I know it all and I believe in it, and I think it's a problem if a husband's trying to get his wife to cook a piece of chicken and she absolutely, totally refuses 12 years in a row for no reason. It's a problem. it's still important to understand, are the other basics, are the other fundamentals and the obligations being neglected or not? Is she raising children? Is she running a home? Is she there for you when she has to be? Also not, or that yes. So I think it's important, and this is the part about the tit for tat. You know, if I don't like that you do things a certain way, or the relationship you have with your mother, or this or that, it's important for me to understand, yeah, but that's not called abusive. Nobody's hitting anyone, Baruch Hashem, should never be that way, and nobody's neglecting something that they're obligated to provide. And if they are, that's a problem. That's a problem. Just recently I was involved in a situation where the I don't want to call the tainas, the complaints, but that's basically what it boiled down to. The complaints were so lopsided, I couldn't believe it. One side was complaining about real basics and fundamental, was the word I'm looking for. Very, very terrible things going on one side of the marriage. Somebody was neglecting and violating real severe issues that should never happen in a marriage. And the counter argument was, yeah, but I have so many other complaints. And those complaints were so trivial in comparison. The point is not to start comparing and saying who's more right and wrong. The point is to understand, one second, this one is complaining that the other one is being abusive, and abuse is abuse. This one's saying, I don't like what you're doing. I know, but it's just not the same. It's not the same. We have these things written up for us. We have to, you know, if life could be better and there's more desirable and quality things that you're looking for that you don't have in your husband or your wife, she doesn't dress exactly the way I want. He doesn't run the Shabbos meal the way I want. It's wonderful complaints, and they're important, and I don't mean to trivialize them. I think they should be dealt with. But to now say, well, I'm not gonna pay the rent, I'm not gonna provide my wife a way to live because she doesn't dress exactly the way I want, you have to realize this, it just doesn't match up. So the point is not that I won't go into the tit for tat mode. It has to add up. It has to add up. Now, here also, for example, you know, I feel that I'm being used. I hear this often. Well, what does it mean you're being used? What does it mean you're being used? If somebody is not giving anything and just taking from you, then I understand you feel used. But to say that I feel like I'm being used when somebody's providing for you, he's there for you, he's helping you, he's a nice guy, he's a respectable person, he's helping you raise children, he's providing, he's giving you whatever you need, and he's not doing things the way you want, that's not called using you. Same thing the other way around. There are men that complain, I feel like an ATM machine, I'm being used. Well, whose food are you eating? Yeah, my wife cooks, but she doesn't do things the way I want. Really? But who's washing the laundry? My wife washes laundry also, and she raises the kids and puts them on the bus and puts them to sleep. But I feel like I'm being used, because whenever she needs money, she asks me for money, and she doesn't take care of things that I want her to. It's very important not to pull that I feel used card. When you're in a relationship and somebody is doing what they have to do. One more thing that I, you know, just to talk about avoiding extreme perspective, is that some people share more than others. It's just, there's no, avoid extremes, because there's a balance and everything is relative. You say, he doesn't share anything with me. Well, some people share more, some people share less. From the people that share less, there's also something that's called normal. But you know, compared to the people who share much more, yeah, it sounds very little. But that's all relative, and that's what it's very it's just important to understand. One more thing that you mentioned before I go on, I don't mean to nitpick, but you said so much, I also have to answer a lot, is that you feel like the Torah way, I'm not sure where that what that really was, but you're saying something like a woman can't have an opinion, she has to just nod her head. Now, I never hinted such a thing, and I don't think it says that anywhere in the Torah either, but it is important for a woman to realize, and not just a woman, I think a man as well, whenever having or expressing an opinion, the two main factors, people don't like to hear this. In which area are you expressing an opinion? And how are you expressing it? There are things that, you can have an opinion about anything, by the way. You can have an opinion about me, you can have an opinion about your neighbor, you can have an opinion about Trump, and about the war in Russia. You can have an opinion about anything. But by the time you're expressing it, and you want to be taken seriously, it's important to realize, one second, what am I expressing my opinion about? Is there something that has to do with me at all? Nothing? Somewhat? So it's just something to think about before you start expressing it. Just know how relevant or how much does someone have to take it seriously. Number two, how are you expressing it? Very important. How are you expressing your opinion about someone? You're allowed to have an opinion about your neighbor because your neighbor probably wants you to have an opinion about the flowers in the front of the house because that's why they put flowers there for you, right? But how are you expressing it? By saying that it's disgusting? By saying it's the worst? By saying it's the best? You have to know how to say something. Are you imposing? Are you making someone feel bad? So to say that a woman can't have an opinion, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Of course a woman can have an opinion. What is it that she's voicing opinions about, and how is she saying it? I think in most cases, you don't have to tiptoe. Just knowing where your opinion comes in, and then knowing how to present it, and when, etc. I think that really does make a difference. And yes, there are people that express opinions, and it's not only women, by the way. I'm just saying it because you said it's women. There are people that express opinions in areas that have nothing to do with them, and they express it in hurtful ways. And then when they wonder why people aren't interested in hearing it or appreciating it, you know, I'm not sure what the question even is. Anyway, with that said, now I don't know your situation, anything more than you're telling me, and I didn't look back what the previous questioner about the bike said, but I think that, let me just start with something simple. I may have mentioned it in the past. Many men, and maybe the same thing with women, by the way, but often it comes out this way. Many men feel, I don't know if it applies to your situation yet at all, many men feel like, I wish I could share everything with my wife. I wish I could share with her what I share with my friend in shul. I'm waiting to share with somebody. I wish I could share with my wife what I share with my father, with my brother, with my chavrusa, with my friend, with my children. I can't. Now, is he right for saying he can't? I don't know. But it's something to think about. Many men would love to share more if only they felt that they could. Sometimes they feel they can't, and really they could. Very often, they feel like if something I share will be used against me, or if I'm going to be made feel bad about it, why would I share that? Why would I share my plans or opinions if you're either going to get in my way, or if you're going to use it against me, or make me feel bad? Now, is he right for not sharing it because she might have a say? I didn't say that. He probably should have shared it and taken her seriously in many cases. But just think about it. If there's a reason why somebody's not sharing something because they're afraid about how it will be taken, then it's not that he doesn't want to share, or he wasn't taught to share, or doesn't realize it's right to share. He wishes he could share. And sometimes it's, for whatever reason, just unpleasant. This is the old joke that I mentioned every once in a while about the kid who got frustrated when he kept on trying to say the right word, and his father kept on correcting him until a point where he said, whatever I say, you say is no good. Now, what was his answer? What was the father's perspective? Well, just say it once right, and I'll tell you it's good. You can't keep on making new mistakes and then wondering why I'm not happy with what you're saying. You know, very, very, very often, men, I'm just saying men for the context of this discussion, would want to share, but sometimes when he shares, you either argue with him about it. Sometimes he wants to share, you make him feel stupid about it. Sometimes he wants to share, you just get in his way. At some point, and like if you'd only say the right thing, the right thing doesn't just mean to nod. The right thing means to understand him, to validate the perspective, to smile, to know when to say, to know what to say, to know how to say that you aren't sure it's the right thing to do, etc. Without justifying why a man is not sharing, I'm explaining that many men feel this way, and it's important to understand that feeling. Now, from the way you relate the story, okay, whoever wants could read again that long question that I read, it's pretty extreme. It is pretty extreme. I'll clearly say that it's pretty extreme. I don't know if your husband is crazy, which doesn't seem that you think he is. Totally off. Like, what's his thing? He doesn't realize he's married. I don't know if he's crazy, or he's in denial, which means he doesn't realize he's going to fool himself and think that he's saying more than he does, but he isn't really. Or he simply doesn't realize the extent of how much of a private life he's living. He just doesn't realize it because nobody ever discussed it with him, or he doesn't know how much other people do share. It could be he doesn't realize that at all. How much he's going to deny half the facts, or at least tell the story differently about how the other 7,500 things he did share, and it's tackle these few things that he didn't share for whatever reason. I don't know. Or he's burnt from the experience. That could also be. I don't know. I don't know if I would ask him, did you just hear what your wife wrote? Is it true? You bought gifts and changed jobs and changed the way you dress and everything without telling your wife? So I don't know if he'll tell me, why would I share with my wife? Which is someone who's not, you know, not in touch. Or he'll say, no, of course I told her. I must have told her. That's the denial part, right? Or it's not realizing, like, I'll be a chiddush, like, wow, really, all that I didn't share? Okay, so he didn't realize the extent of it. Or he might tell me that these are the few isolated things he didn't share, but really there's so much more that he shares the whole day, and for whatever reason, these few things slipped his mind. For whatever reason, he bought it on the way home, the other 17 gifts he did tell. Or he's going to tell me he's burnt from the experience. So I'm just listing it again so that you take things into... I mean, something's a little off over here. Could it be that he's going to tell me, oh, I'm going to start telling you what I'm buying from you. You know what that's going to entail? whether it's her OCD or her stinginess or her criticism or whatever. Well, now she's asking, why for him I'm buying, why not for her? I have no idea. I'm just mentioning these things, and it's very important, you know, to differentiate and understand it. Now, the simplest would be, if the real answer is that he's burnt by the experience, then it would be simplest to to change the reaction, as opposed to if he's crazy or he's just sees a different story, then it's probably a little harder to get the results you're looking for. You did mention that, so let's talk a little about what you could do, right? The question is, what do you do? What does a woman do? So we already negated the idea of tit for tat and going into withholding or resisting things that are obligatory. That's not even a question. But what could you do? Who said you could do something? Now, you claim that it might be his high ego. You didn't mention about him, but you were talking about the high ego of a husband. Now, I don't know if it's a high ego of a husband who's not sharing enough. Could be it is. But if it is, you're probably not going to change it with listening to my class. Maybe if he would listen, it would change, which I don't think so. But you listening and you asking the question is probably not going to help. Somebody recently reached out to me with a question, and he asked me, what's the short answer for working on this and this thing? And I'm thinking to myself, the Och Tzadikim had a very long answer, 200 pages, and you want my short answer? If the problem here is somebody's high ego, especially if he's not crazy, then you really think that there's a quick answer to resolving someone's high ego? I wish there would be. But I don't believe there is. Especially because you have to always remember, you can't force someone to feel a certain way. And someone's ego is about how they feel and their self-perception. You're not changing that very quickly. So it's just important to remember. Now, if you're going to tell me, I just want to clarify, between the lines. If you're going to tell me that he's spending the money that you're making and buying gifts for the children without telling you, or he's emptying your pocketbook and money that you brought in, etc., and he's not telling you about it, then you find yourself in the store without any money in your pocketbook. There are different things that this has to do with you, and there's things that you could do just to make sure that it's not going to happen technically. But if you're talking about things that you don't like the style somebody does something, and you don't like how they think or feel about something, you're limited about how much you could really control someone. And just remember that. It's important to remember that, just so that you calm down and know what you could or can't accomplish. And like I said before, any kind of weapons or any kind of getting into fight mode, especially when inappropriate or disproportionate, is definitely not something to try. So yeah, communication ends up being almost everything you could do in such cases. In such cases where it's not you, it's someone else, the way they're doing something, you don't like it, communicate. Now you say you try, maybe. Maybe you tried. And what I tell people is that if you tried communicating the right way and you did it the right way and didn't work, so what's your question? What's left? What, the sledgehammer? No, I think it's important to communicate. And I don't think there's a reason to be afraid to say what's bothering you. I think that if you're very careful about how to say it, when to say it, and what to say, I believe that you'll be able to break through this issue. You could be very firm, not fighting, but you could be very firm about how much this bothers you. As long as you start the conversation in the right moment, not when it's triggering or challenging, and you start by saying that you know that it doesn't mean anything wrong, and you know that it might be your issue, and you still appreciate it because it really is so hurtful, even though maybe you shouldn't take it personally, etc., etc., and you cushion it the right way, and you say it not apologetically, like, maybe it doesn't really bother me so much, or maybe it's only because my grandmother used to, this bothers me very much. You're very clear about it. You don't say it once, you say it twice, or three times, or four times, without sounding like a broken tape recorder, without putting someone down. I definitely think that you'll be able to accomplish a lot. But don't get into fight mode. Don't start, when communication doesn't work, or at least when somebody realizes doesn't think that it's working right away, and people get, if this is not working, then you know what I'm going to do because of it? Don't do that. Somebody told me recently, it's amazing to see how most fights are over love. Most people that are fighting, they're not fighting because they hate each other, they're fighting because they love each other. I love you, and I want you to love me, and because you don't love me enough, I'm going to get into a fight with you. So I'm fighting with you to love me. You want to fight? Fight with your enemy. You're fighting with the person you want to love most. That doesn't bring love. Now, if none of this works, no communication works, and no anything works, especially no working on the way you reacted to the way your husband tries to share things with you, if that doesn't either work, then yeah, I think you should just build your husband and back him. When he tells you that he bought a gift for a child the last second, you say, wow, that's amazing. Yankee is so lucky you have such a good father. Now, that might work to make your husband feel more comfortable sharing with you next time he wants to buy another gift. Might. And if it doesn't, it won't damage anything. You won't cause any damage. If you decide that nothing's going to help, you never reacted wrongly when your husband shared with you information, and you tried asking nicely, didn't either help, then at least be part of this. Again, you decided in any way nothing's helping. You're not causing damage if nothing's helping anyway by being part of this. And the last part, which people don't like hearing, but recently somebody told me it was very helpful to him, the fact that I mentioned it in the Shia, so I'll say it again. When any part of your marriage, or any part of your relationship, or any part of anything is not working, you tried everything and it's still not working, you have two choices. You could either fight it until the end, which, Mitzvah Hashem, you'll be very old, but you have to keep on putting up the fight till 110, or you could accept. You have a wonderful husband, he's being nice, he's providing, he's not sharing, he's using an employer-employee relationship, which is very not gishmak. Maybe just accepting it and stopping to harp on it and being resentful about it will at least let you have the best employer-employee relationship that anyone in the world had. And by the way, there are people that have very close relationships with their employers, but I don't think it's a good thing, but at least you could enjoy life for what it is. But I believe that any woman who really tries to understand why her husband might not be sharing things, and she'll communicate to him about how much it affects her, those two things together, making sure she's not doing anything to make him not want to share, and being clear about how much it would mean to her if he did share, and still decides to not do anything else to react and get back at somebody who's not sharing enough in things that are clearly about his boundary, like you said, clearly about his boundary, I think you'll definitely be in the best place you could be. Maybe there's better, but I don't know. I think you'll be in the best place you could be. And you ended off saying something about right and wrong and the chicken and the egg. I don't know. I don't want to call it trivial and childish, because I don't want to trivialize anything that's bothering anyone. But most often, it's just relative. Right and wrong is relative. As long as we're not talking about extremes, it's relative. It's relative. And knowing what came first and why he's doing this and why you're doing that, don't go there. Don't be busy with that. So I want to sum it up, because I want to make sure that I'm coming across clear, because this is a big issue, at least for some people. The first thing was just avoid extremes. Avoid extremes means that I don't think that I'm being clear, that being too open and having to share everything, or being too close and sharing nothing, is definitely not a good way to do things. So if anyone out there is hearing this and realizing that they may be on some extreme, which some of it sounds like we're discussing here, it's certainly not good. It's not a way to be married, it's not a marriage, it's not anything. The other thing I said is to avoid extremes. Don't see this as dynamite, abuse, neglect, and I have to protect myself and get back at my husband or make sure he can't do this. Take it for what it is. It's his boundary, you said, that he's not sharing about. Work with it, figure it out, do something about it, but don't get into fight mode over this. This is not somebody who's not providing food and shelter. Just remember that. The next thing is to really understand, why is he not sharing? So like I said, I don't know if he's crazy or not, but chances are that he has a different story about either how much he is sharing, which already makes it less extreme, or about why he's not sharing, which is something that you should think about, and something everyone should think about. Instead of forcing people to share and forcing people to want to do things a certain way, work with it. Try to figure that out. And as long as it's about him and his boundaries and not about abusing you or taking advantage of you specifically, then I think what you might be boiling down to, if you already made the cheshbon and see there's nothing that you're doing wrong, communicate. Firmly, repeatedly, in a nice way, the right way, and be clear about how much it would mean to you, and thank him for when he does share, right, to the best of your ability to make those changes. And know how to react when he does share, obviously. And if none of that works, then yes, I think you might be better off just accepting it. Not accepting breaks relationships and causes more resentment. So with that, I think I'll just remind everyone what it means to be Noyach Mutzach Chaim B'Ayinei Hashem. Naichel Al Yoinim. Being pleasant, being easy, being workable, being flexible, it's something that we do with the people around us, and it's something that really makes a big difference in the eyes of Hashem. And we work on that, and we work on our relationships, and it's from another year, a fresh start, and I yourself will all find a way to be Naichel Al Yoinim and Tachtoinim and live together. Bahava Achav Shalom Varayas.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.